Rabbi, so today I want to continue our discussion of the laws of Yerusha. Yesterday we spoke about the halachic will. Okay, but we're not going to do that again today. That was yesterday. How the techniques that are used today in order that there should not be any shaila, any problem in violating the laws of Yerusha and the Torah. That was yesterday, the halachic will. Today I want to discuss some general, short ideas and concepts that relate to Yerusha. First thing is, it's very important to take note that nowhere in the Torah does it say a son inherits his father. It's a very bizarre concept. The Torah says it in an indirect way. It says, and if he, if it happens to be that he doesn't have a son, then v'havartemes nachaloso levito. He has no daughter. Then resatem es nachlaso to his brother leachov, to his brothers. V'imein lo achim unresatem es nachlaso leachiv, to his uncles. V'imein achim leaviv. Then it goes down to his closest relative. Nowhere in the Torah does it say that a son shall inherit his father. It's only derived indirectly. If there is no son, if the obvious is not going to happen, then it will go to his daughter. If there is no daughter, it will go to his brothers. No brothers, it will go to his uncles. There are no uncles, so find a relative. It will go l'sheiro hakarov elav. Right, but it's very strange. You would expect the Torah to say, to be very straightforward, that there's something called Yerusha, children, v'snachaltem asim levnechem acharechem l'oresh sachuz. We have that with regard to Eretz Yisrael. Maybe someone learned from there. V'snachaltem asim levnechem acharechem l'oresh sachuz. That's avodim kananim. Avodim kananim. Okay, so, but here is the this is the primary source for Yerusha, all the rules of Yerusha, and it's only taught to us indirectly. The Mefarshim learn from this halacha. The Yerusha of Eretz Yisrael. Yerusha, it's also okay. But it is alluded to. It is alluded to in the Torah. Okay. It's alluded to in the Torah, there's going to be nachla to children, but we would expect in the primary section where we actually lay out the rules, the guide, because especially here the chiddush, a daughter has Yerusha, because if not for this, there would not be such a thing as Yerusha to a daughter where there are no sons. This is the parsha, and in the parsha there is no mention.
It also says something, lo yuchal levaker ben ahuva.
That's the pishnayim. Pishnayim. So the pishnayim is assuming there's going to be Yerusha. In addition to the Yerusha, make sure you give him pishnayim. But nowhere in the Torah does it explicitly say that when a person dies, his assets go to his son. It doesn't say that anywhere in the Torah. So this has opened up a very interesting concept in the laws of Yerusha, which have nafkaminas lahalacha. It opens up the lumdis of Yerusha, and the theme, the idea that I saw in different sfarim, that they say this idea. Let's just compare the difference between a son and a daughter. A son, it's not as we think. A son, a person dies, and he leaves over an estate, he leaves over assets, and then those assets are transferred into the account to the possession of the son. That's not the way it works. The way it works is the son stands in the shoes of the father. The fact that Torah chose not to make mention, it tells us the Yerusha is not the pshat, that a person is a son and a father are two different people. There's a son, there's a father, they have nothing to do with one another. It's just that the Torah says that when a person dies, the assets have to go somewhere, so we're going to go give it to the closest relative. The closest relative is going to be a son. It's not the way it works. The son is the father. Bara kare de'avua. A child is the foot of the father, which means the son steps into the shoes of the father. The reason why the Torah does not say that if a person dies, then his asset shall go to his son. There's no need for the assets to go to the son. It's like if a person should give a transfer from his left hand to his right hand. If his left hand is not feeling well, he has some type of nega on his left hand, so take it from your left hand and put it in your right hand. It's not necessary for the Torah to say that. The son steps into the shoes of the father. When it comes to a daughter, It's not the way it works. A daughter does not step into the shoes of the father. The daughter has a zechus. The assets, if there are no sons, then the Torah says, the assets of the father shall be transferred into the possession of the daughter. Now this may sound very splitting hairs and very obscure. Well, what are we trying really to bring out? So let me give you an affidavit which this concept touches upon a very controversial an unresolved area of halacha. Is there Yerusha with regard to Sarara? Sarara is a general term called authority. A classic example, Rabbanus. Does a child have the right, does a child, a son, inherit the Rabbanus of the father? The father was appointed by a community to be a Rav, and then the father dies. Does the son have first rights? Now, of course, the Rambam discussed this, but we're discussing a situation where the son is qualified. He may not be the best candidate. There may be other celebrities out there that are better speakers and bigger talmidei chachamim, but you have to understand something. This is the Mefarshim explain. When the father was alive, and the father was doing his job, are there better people than the father? Of course there are, right? You have a rabbi, and the rabbi is doing his job. Can you go get are there better rabbanim out there in the world? Can you find me, give me a list of 50 people that can do the job better than the current rabbi? Yes. But is that a reason to fire the rabbi? No. Is the rabbi doing his job? He's doing his job. He was voted in. He's sufficient. He's okay. Just because you're telling me there's a guy down the street that can do the job a lot better, you're not allowed to fire the rabbi for no reason, just because someone is better. Same thing when it comes to the son. The rabbi is no longer here. He has a son. Are there other candidates out there? Yes. Are they better? Maybe they're better. Is the son okay? Will the son get the job done? Is the son sufficient? Yes. So is there a Yerusha with regard to a Rabbanus? Let's talk about a Gabbai Tzedakah. Or let's talk about an administrator in a shul, a president, or a Gabbai, or any type of position which involves Sarara. Is there something called Yerusha? So this is a very, very big debate. The Chassam Sofer has a long tshuva on this, and he has a few tshuvas. And the tshuvas seem to contradict one another. One place he says he does, and he doesn't. He has a charata. We learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, he wanted to give over his leadership to his children, to Eliezer and Gershom. And Hashem said no. In this week's parasha, Hashem said, you're not. It's going to Yehoshua. Yeshua is going from this. Seemingly we learn that when it comes to Torah, there is no such thing as Yerusha. In fact, it says, Haskein atzmecha lilma Torah she'eina Yerushalach. We have a Shechazah that tells us that Torah, authority in Torah, which seemingly is what Rabbanus is, it represents the Torah leadership, is Haskein atzmecha lilma she'eina Yerushalach. Torah is not given Yerusha. Mishnah Pirkei Avos says that the Kisra Shel Tarach is Munach in the Karen Zavis. Whoever wants can work on it, can take for himself the Kisra Shel Tarach. There is no Yerusha. It's not like Malchus. When it comes to Malchus, when it comes to the kingdom, there the Torah says that the Farish that and the Parish of Melch and Parish Shoftim, the Farish Ulubanov. The Torah says that Malchus does go down from father to son. So the big question is, where do modern day positions of authority fall? Does it fall in the category of Malchus? We learn from the concept of Malchus that it does go from father to son. Or does it fall in the category of Moshe Rabbeinu giving over his leadership to Yeshua? We went to Yeshua and did not go to his children. So the Mefarshim explained that it touches upon this issue that we've just discussed. Now here's again, telling you things which are raw. They're incomplete because these are issues that are not resolved, and every situation, of course, is different. You can't generalize. But we just discussed this concept that the Torah does not make any mention of a son inheriting the assets of his father, because it's not, and Yerusha has a connotation of to give. There's assets. The assets have to be directed to another account, to another person. A son is better. A son doesn't have to receive. A son steps in to the shoes of his father. He is a continuation of his father. But here's the catch. A son is only a continuation of the father when the father dies. When the father is alive, there are still two separate entities. Therefore, when it comes to sarara, there are different types of sarara. Sometimes a sarara is established, the person holds the office until his death. And then when he dies, the rabbi dies in office, it's a lifetime position, literally until he dies. And then when he dies, now we have to find a new candidate. But there are many positions, and most positions have been established, you don't have the position until you die. You only have the position as long as you're able to do it, as long as you're able to function. When you're no longer able to function, then the position is over. Now, you're alive, you're alive, you have retired. Okay, most rabbanim don't die in office, they retire. Okay, you retired. If you are in a matzav of retirement, your son does not step into your shoes. Your son is a different entity. Being a different entity is not Yerusha. The Torah does not give a son that type of Yerusha. The Torah gives a son Yerusha where the son steps into his father's shoes, which only occurs in a situation where the father dies, and then the question is, where does that authority now go? But if a position that changes hands when the predecessor is alive does not necessarily follow the pattern of Yerusha in the Torah between father and son. So this is a very big issue. Most positions today are not positions that you have until death, no matter what. You think about Hasidic Rebbes, right? The Rebbe is the Rebbe. Even if the Rebbe is in a coma, he's the Rebbe. So then, this is how people. This is a man-made establishment. The way people have established this is that he's the Rebbe until he dies. So then, in a chanami, you have an argument to say it's a type of swara that comes to an end with death, and with death, the son comes mamal mekama of his father. In a chanami, there's a strong argument to be made that there should be swara should go be Yerusha as long as the son is roy. He can get the job done to a degree of satisfaction for the majority of the people, even though they may indeed be better candidates. But if the position is such where it's only been established to last for a term, and then the term comes to an end, the person steps out, and now we have to decide who's going to take over, that's not Yerusha of the Torah. That's not Yerusha. Then that's we have to, who should we transfer it to? The son is not Mamali Mekoyim. He doesn't step into the shoes. If he happens to be the best candidate, he'll win. But if he's not the best candidate, people want someone else, they have the right. So this is a very tough issue. On the other hand, yeah?
I have a perfect example of Adi Yosef Zerikadish Rocha. His son steps straight into his father's shoes.
What? By where? Where?
Adi Yosef.
No, that's chief rabbi. No. The chief rabbi is only a term position. Adrab, that there are conditions, and there was a delay.
Yosef wasn't the chief rabbi.
Not previously, a long time ago he was.
Yeah.
A long time.
When he passed away.
No, he wasn't the chief rabbi. He only had it for a few terms. He wasn't. No, I'm not discussing many years ago. Adi Yosef was the chief rabbi.
But when he passed away, he wasn't.
Well, right. Right, of course. It just happens to me now, by coincidence, that Rabbi Lau and Rabbi Yosef, who happen to be sons of previous chief rabbis, who are not current. They were not the last. They didn't take over from their father. In between them, there was a gap of many years. Rav Adi Yosef wasn't chief rabbi for many years already. Many, many years. Decades. Yeah?
Lifetime contracts.
Yes.
I think you have to differentiate between a chassidus shishur.
Yeah. You can't generalize. Every situation, also there's another difference. Another difference is if you have created the shul yourself, you're the bialim. If there's no shul and you yourself go ahead and you create the shul and you convince people to recognize you, it's you're the boss. You do whatever you want. And even if you can't do everything you want, it could be that since you are the one that created, there are the certain derecheret, certain rights, and you can't judge. I just want to throw out this concept. There's a concept, the Torah, it's a very powerful concept. The Torah's review, the Yesod, a very powerful Yesod. The Torah does not anywhere mention in the context of Yerusha, a son is Yerush the father. The Torah tells us about a daughter being Yerush, about brothers, uncles, but not about a son. Why not? Mepharshim pick up on this because a son's form of Yerusha is different. A son steps into the shoes of the father. But this concept of stepping into the shoes, being the Malam Akamah, was only a true transition at the time of death. If you have, even though we do know that there's something called a malchus, is also death. The king is the king until he dies, right? Until the king dies, we learn that from David and Shlomo. Hashem says to David, David says to Hashem, Hashem, I wonder when I'm going to die. It's a very simple question. So Hashem says, I can't tell you when you're going to die. So David says, you die on Shabbos. So David says, Shabbos? Chil Shabbos? I don't want to die on Shabbos. Let me die on Friday. As Friday, to take away one day of your avodah, I don't want to take away one day of your avodah. So David, okay, so let me die on Sunday. So Hashem says to David, it's already the zman of your son. It's already the tkufa of Shlomo. The ein malchus achas nagas b'chavad afil kum lo nima. Some farshim is the kasha. So what's the big deal? Let David die on Sunday, and David will give over the malchus on Shabbos. So David will be alive, and Shlomo will be alive, and David will give over the malchus. The answer is, it's not the way malchus works. Malchus works where the son steps into the shoes of the father. You can't have a clone. You can't have two people. It's the son is stepping. That's how the Sarara of Malchus, the Yerusha of Sarara, is a Yerusha that works with Yerusha. The father dies, the son steps in, there's only one seamless hemshach. So look today at modern times, look at different types of forms of surara that man has established among themselves. If the rules of the surah have been established as lifetime positions, where it's long as the heart is beating, as long as you have a pulse, it's yours. Or as long as there's brain waves, however you want to define the end of life, this life is going on, then Enoch Nami. Now we have precedent in the Torah that this Sarara does go be Yerusha. A Melech Sarara goes be Yerusha. And we have Yerusha, we have Sarara, the two overlap. But if you're going to have a man-made type of position where it does not depend on life, it's term. It comes to a term, the term ends, and a person retires, or if a person is no longer doing his duties, then that's it. You die in office, maybe fine, somewhere in the middle. If you die in office, you die in office. But if you don't die in office, but if you stop doing your functions and the people need these services, and someone has to now take over and fill these services, and your heart is still beating, who says that is called a Yerusha? That type of Yerusha does not fit into the pattern that Torah has established. Who says we have take the son, we can take someone else. These are very, then you have to also take into consideration there's derech eretz, and there can be an almana, and there can be family issues. There are other issues that you can't generalize in any of these issues. There are so many different factors, but this is just an interesting concept which is interesting in the context of Yerusha. Another very big interesting is money. If a rabbi receives money, it's a zechus mamon. What is Yerusha all about? By and large, Yerusha is all about money. Forget about the sarara, the authority. This family, this rabbi, has a zuchus mamon. There's a salary to be paid. He does mechiras chametz. There's a certain amount of money that comes in. There are services he does. It's a zuchus mamon. Who has the right to take away the zuchus when the person dies? Just like your assets go be Yerusha to your children, your zuchuyos and mamon go to your children. Right. So if this is the rabbi, Rabbi, so the zechus mamon that he has to take the salary, to take money for doing community service, perhaps some want to argue, that is what goes down the Yerusha to the children. And if you want to take it away from the children, you have to appease them, you have to satisfy, you have to pay out a certain severance package to the children to take away their zechus mamon, to pay out whatever that zechus is. So this is another important factor that it has to be taken into consideration. Now there's another very big issue, Rabbanus. We have Moshe Rabbeinu, the Chasam Sofer deals with this. We receive Moshe Rabbeinu, his sarara did not go down to his children. Now, first of all, there's a famous Maram Shik. The Maram Shik, it did go to his children. How did it go to his children? A Talmud is the greatest child. That's what the Maram Shik says. Don't bring any riots from Moshe Rabbeinu and Yeshua, because Yeshua was a Talmud. Lo yomish mitaycha oyal. Talmidov shel adam v'shinantam levanecha levanecha elah ha-talmidim. So don't bring any riots in the case of Moshe and Yeshua and Echanami did go down. Another very big issue is there's a din of Torah and there's a din of Sarara. They're not necessarily that Moshe wanted to be Moirish his koich of harbatzas Torah. Most Rabbanim today in modern day and age, okay, you have to discuss every generation of situation, Rabbanis today is not Torah. It's not Harbatzas Torah. Most Rabbanim today are not making halachic decisions. They're passing what it says in the book, what it says in the art scroll, what it says in this sefer and that sefer. A rabbi today is a community leader. It's more Sarara than it is Torah. So you want to use the pattern of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't give it over to his children. That's right, because Moshe was giving over Torah. And Torah, total Torah leadership, Einochinami, it's the Munach B'keren Zavis, Kol Haba, anyone who wants to come take the Keset Torah, take it. Hask, that's the little Torah Sheni Yerushalach. But Sarara, community leader, that's the din of Malchus. Din of Malchus, maybe you can argue, does have a right to go down to children. So this is very fascinating, very different issues. In fact, the Ramban, Yerodeus says, Rabbanus does go to children. It does go down to Yerusha. And again, everyone attacks the Ramah, and they discuss what Ramah means, and if it can really be applied to every type of situation. So let's go to another idea. Another idea with regard to Yerusha. And that is a wife's Yerusha. This is the husband inheriting a wife. Does a husband inherit? Nowhere does it say in the Torah that a husband shall inherit his wife. Doesn't say this anywhere. All it says is, it talks about having a, we assume a son, a daughter. Talks about brothers. What about a son? The Gemara makes a drasha. And the drasha is a very bizarre drasha. One of the most bizarre drashas in the entire Torah. The Gemara says that it's a bizarre drasha. There are no brothers to the father. If there are no brothers to the father, so then you give the nachalaso l'sheiro to a relative. A she'er means a relative. Hakaroiv elav mimishpachto v'yarashayso. Chazal take this pasuk, which has nothing to do with the relationship of a husband and wife, and they say thus. The word she'er in Chazal's terminology is a code for a wife. Now it says, Lish Eiro, you shall give his inheritance to his Lish. Take that lamet. Take a knife. The Gemara says, take a knife, a sharp knife, and cut it out. That's what the Gemara says. A sakin chodif. Cut it out. And take the word, the vav at the end. Lish Eiro. So there's a vav, Lish Eiro. Take take the lamid, nachla, and I take the vav at the end of the pasuk, lish eiro, that vav, cut it out. They have two letters, the lamid and the vav, the lamid and the vav. And now reorder and make those two letters into a new word, lo. And read the pasuk, unesatem es nachalas she'er. Low. Take es nachalas she'er lo. You shall give the inheritance of the wife lo to the husband. Okay, so extreme measures. Chazal here have gone through extreme measures of taking over here the lamed and the vav, slicing it out of the pasuk, making it into a new word to make a drasha. Give the inheritance of the wife lo. Yeah.
Says in Bereish, Al Kain Yazav Ish. First of all, what better possible?
Basar Echad is a child. They're partners. That's when they're married. That's when they're married. When the husband dies, here's the problem.
But it defines who She'er is.
Okay, so She'er is a wife. So we have here a wild drasha that tells us that the husband of Nasatmas Nachlash She'er Lo. Give the inheritance of the wife to him. Nachlash She'ero. Take not that, the vav and the word Nachalaso. The vav on the word Nachalaso, take that vav out. Unasatem es Nachalas She'ero Lo. The vav of the word Nachalaso and the lamed of L'She'ero, those two letters which are next to each other, you cut them out. Make a new word, that's what we learn. So here is something very busy. The question is this drasha a deiraisa or a derabanan? It's machlekes the Rambam and the Ravid. The Rambam holds that this drasha, this that a husband inherits his wife, is only a derabanan. Minatoira, there's no such thing. Minatoira, there's no such thing. There is no such drasha. This nasmachta to take a knife and cut out letters and make new words does not have the power that it should be a deraisa. It's only a derabanan. Minela, it's a din derabanan. The Ravid disagrees. The Ravid says that it's a deraisa. The husband inherits his wife deraisa. Now, by the way, interesting halacha side point. Why does a husband mourn for his wife? Why do all the laws of Avelos apply to the husband if Chas Shalom his wife dies?
Why shouldn't it?
He's not. They're not a blood relative. She's not a blood relative. What does a man? They live together. So they're roommate. Let's say you have a roommate. You live in a dormitory. You have a roommate. So you sit shiva for a roommate. Sitting shiva is for a blood relative. A wife is not.
If they created children. Then
so what? She was a partner. She's a business partner. What?
A husband and wife are like one neshama. Like
that's Kabbalah. You're talking hechra and yonim. This is chassidish talk. Let's talk dollars and cents. A wife is not a blood relative. She's a partner in producing children. She's not a blood relative. Why does a person? So it's a shocking halacha. And the only reason why, this is the halacha, the Rambam. The only reason why a husband mourns for his wife is because he inherits her. It's because since he, the either deraisa or derabanan, whether it's deraisa like the Ravid or rabbanan like the Rambam, a husband inherits his wife because she becomes his responsibility. Everyone says, all the relatives, why should we bury her? Let the one that inherits her, this is the way the mind works. It's a very frightening thing. Chazal, we yuri l'sev dai t'shalada. A person dies. Okay, Baruch Hashem, we live in a modern society where Baruch Hashem, things happen in a dignified way very quickly. But in ancient times, a person dies. The person can't bury themselves. When was the last time you saw a dead man bury themselves? You need someone to bury the dead. Who's going to do it? I take off a day of work to go bury the person, to go out to a cemetery and dig a grave and bury the person. It's a lot of work, a lot of time, it's a hot day. Not me, you do it. Who's going to do it? Who has the responsibility? So you know what a person says to the one that has the most to gain out of this person's death, let them do it. So what do the children say? Well, the children have no choice because they're blood relative, but what do the children say? Why should we go bury the person? Who's inheriting all of her assets? This man, our stepfather or our father, he is going to inherit her assets. He has the most to gain out of her death. So Mimela, he has... Yeah, the Rambam. Mimela, because the husband... It's a shocking thing, but that's how it goes. Because if everyone else says, we're not responsible, and it becomes his meis mitzvah, the husband's meis mitzvah, because he's the one that inherits. Once he inherits her, and he has the obligation to bury her, Chazal put upon him the obligation to mourn. It's a secondary type of mourning. What? Only until Shloshim, right. Normally mourning is only until Shloshim. This that children mourn for a year, that's not a Avelos Darais. That's a different type of Avelos. But mourning Bechlal is only for 30 days. So this is a secondary type of mourning only because he inherits her. And his inheritance of her is only either it's a drasha, Khalifa Sakina, sharp knife cutting letters, and it's a machlaikis Rabbam the Rabbis the Rais of the Rabbanan. Now let me just illustrate this I saw in Sefer, I have a value Yosef's son. He has a lot of svarim on halacha, beautiful, beautiful svarim. So he has a beautiful chiddush. He says that this machlokes Sham and the Ravid is really a teiku in the Gemara. The Gemara has a whole series of dilemmas where a person says to himself, "I'm divorcing you, but I'm making conditions." We have a general rule: a divorce is not complete unless it's krisus, it's complete severance. If a man divorces, gives his wife a get, he makes a condition in the divorce. There's a debate. It's questionable if it's a good divorce because the divorce is conditional. So the rule is, the only time a divorce is not a good divorce if the matter relates to obligations that are conditions of the marriage itself. But if the condition is something that is external, then it's a good divorce. For example, a man gives his wife a get, I'm giving you a get, and this get is only will work if you give me $100. When you give me the $100, then the get is triggered. It's activated. It works. Because the $100 has nothing to do with the marriage. The marriage is dissolved. I want an external condition to be triggered in order to activate this divorce. But a man says, I'm divorcing you, but you can't marry so and so. Not marrying someone else is a halacha that relates specifically because you're married to me, you can't marry someone else. I'm going to divorce you, giving you the get, on the condition you don't marry so and so. That is a contradiction to the essence of divorce. But if you give a woman a divorce, I'm giving you a divorce, but on the condition that you give me money, or that the stocks go up tomorrow, the stocks go down tomorrow, has nothing to do with marriage, then it works. So here's the question. A man gives a divorce to his wife, an incredible case. The Gemara asks the question. A man gives a get to his wife and says, here's your divorce, on the condition that I will still inherit you. You're a multi-billionaire. Right, you own stock, you own Apple. When the divorce is, here's the divorce, on the condition that when you die, Achamev Eshem, I inherit you. Is that condition, is it a kosher get? The Gemara says, teiku. Let the question stand. There's no way we can resolve the issue. So Rav Adi Yosef, I think his son-in-law said, I told you, his son-in-law, he says, what's the Gemara Shaila teiku? It's the machlokes, the Rambam and the Ravid. When a man inherits his wife, is this part of the rules of marriage? I'm married to you. A man is married to a woman. Part of being married is unisatem es nachalas she'ero lo. The inheritance of the wife goes to the husband. It's a deraisa. The drasha of the Gemara of cutting off the letters and rearranging them is a deraisa, because the fact that the husband inherits his wife is part of the marriage. It's a drasha deraisa, being that it's a drasha deraisa that indicates that it's part of the essence of marriage. So if you're going to divorce a woman making condition that I'm still going to inherit you, I'm going to divorce you, but I'm still going to inherit you, that is a contradiction to divorce. Divorce means there's no inheritance. But if you learn like the Ravid, that it's not a deraisa, that this whole drasha of the Mikra, the man has nothing when it comes to the woman's assets, he has nothing to do with her assets, she gets to keep it for herself, and this that we have where Chazal enacted, this takana was for different reasons, whatever the reasons were, that a husband should inherit his wife's assets, that's not part of the essence of marriage. So then it's an external condition. An external condition, it would not affect the divorce. It would be a valid divorce. The Gemara has this dilemma. The Gemara does not have an answer. What is the nature of this drasha? The Raya said the Rabbanan. And that's what the Gemara says, Teiku. The Rambam, they just came to pick up on part of the Gemara, where the Gemara means teku, to fill in the details, to show we have taken away over here. Almost thing over here is there are really three different types of Yerusha. There is a Yerusha of a son. The son's Yerusha of the father is a very different type of Yerusha. The son, it's direct, it's seamless. The son steps into the feet, the shoes of his father. Then there's a Yerusha of anyone besides the son. Daughter, brother, uncle, relative. That's not seamless. Then the money of the person dies, the money is put into an estate. And then the estate is transferred to a new party. Happens automatically. You don't need a kinyan. According to most Rishonim, if a daughter inherits, there's no need for a kinyan. It happens automatically. But it's not the same level, the seamless type of Yerusha, like a son stepping into a son. And then there's the third category of Yerusha, and that is a husband inheriting his wife. That's a weaker type of Yerusha. That, it's not an entitlement. It's something which Chazal were misaken, at least according to the Rambam, where his wife dies. Chazal basically took away who the money would normally go to, and they redirected with the koyach of Hefker Bez and Hefker through this drasha on the satim as nachlas she'er lo to the husband. So it's a weaker form of Yerusha, which may indeed require a kinyan, actual kinyan, because it's not for real. The husband doesn't actually own the assets until he takes possession of the assets. A third lower category of kinyan. But one of the quick things I want to point out, yeah.
Why
Because the Torah doesn't tell them. The Torah only allows a son, a nail to step into the father's shoes. There's no such thing. No, that's the point we're making, exactly, that when there is no son, the Torah now invented a new concept where money is transferred. When there is a son, the son, it's seamless. The son steps into the shoes of the father. It's seamless. When there is no son, the money is transferred to an estate, an invisible estate, like a corporation. Maybe this is the makar for a corporation. And then, there's no steps. And then that estate now is transferred down to the daughters. Or if there are no daughters, to the brother. No brothers, to the uncle. And then there's even a weaker type of Yerusha, which is when a husband inherits his wife. Okay, we'll put into two very quick things tied from yesterday. We learned yesterday the issue of wills, of secular wills, and we mentioned that it was customary until modern times. There was no such thing as a halachic will. This thing that we discussed yesterday, this halachic will, is a modern invention. Rav Moshe says, Achiez, it was traditional for people to rely on secular wills for a variety of reasons. Now, there were communities, it seems to be very popular in certain communities where the custom was to follow the laws of the Torah 100%, where a daughter gets nothing. Okay, there were definitely Hasidic communities, but the Chasam Sefer, the Yerusha, person dies, he has assets, the sons get the assets, and the daughters get zero. Problem is, the money is in a bank, or the money is in a secular law, and when the son comes to take all the money, the bank says, what are you, crazy? This is the highway robbery. There's a daughter. Secular law says that all the money should be divided among the daughters. So they would tell the daughter, They would intimidate the daughter. They say, sign the dotted line that you meichel, you forgive, you meichel your rights on the money. You don't want to violate the Torah law. Torah says, the makayim bein ein labas klum. So the bank would only release all of the assets to the sons, denying the daughters a penny, even one penny, only when the daughters would come to court, they would show up in court, and they would sign the dotted line to declare, I hereby forfeit my right to my father's estate. Okay, what? Well, they did. A lot of people did this. Well, there were many communities that did this. Okay, we discussed yesterday. Today, it's unheard of. What? No, this
depends on what the child, the daughters have to be.
Oh, fed, right? Don't attack on this. So let's say they're married. Let's discuss a simple case where they're married. They're adults. They have their own family. They're supported. But let's talk about a modern case.
Have a kind on certain.
Right. If they're not only putos, only when they're young to get married. Only if they're not yet married. They're not yet married and they're of a certain age. But let's discuss the case. Modern day. Okay, let's discuss a Haredi family and the daughters and the sons. They decide, you know what, we're going to follow what it says in the Torah. The Torah says, so the money is in a Geisha bank and the father dies. He leaves over $1,000 and there's a son and a daughter. So the son comes to the bank and says, I'm going to withdraw all the money. It's all mine. The bank says, what are you talking about? According to the secular law, there's an estate, and the estate goes to the heirs. Who are the heirs? The heirs are, there's a son and a daughter. It's 50-50. Yeah. So the son says, well, we're Orthodox Jews. The Orthodox Jewish law tells us that the makom bein ein labas klum. So the officer of the bank says, very interesting, but I can't allow that to happen unless she comes here and she signs a document that says that she gives up, she waives all her assets. So the daughter comes. To the bank. This is very common, and she says, "Listen, you're telling me that halacha is halacha, but if you want me to sign, pay me for my service. Pay me $500 for my service, or at least pay me $400. You don't want to give me. You don't want to give me. You, my brother, you're a tough guy. You want to deny me. You make me feel guilty. You tell me. You take out the chumash. You show me what it says in the chumash. Okay, I'm not going to take the money. I'm not going to go to court. But you want me to sign? To sign? I charge a fee for my signature. So is this unethical? If you are following this mahalik, again, this is a mahalik. We don't do this today. Most people don't do this today. But if you do go with this approach, that a daughter gets zip, she gets zero, because the Torah says it goes to the son. And now the daughter can, the son can only get his money if the daughter will sign the waiver. Is the daughter allowed to charge her brothers a significant amount of money for her signature? So this Shiloh takes up an enormous amount of rabbinic literature. They deal with this. Some argue she's within her rights. Absolutely, this is not a subterfuge. She has a right. I'm not going to go take the money, but I have a right to demand $400 from the $1,000 for my signature. If you can get the money without me signing, so take it. But if you want me to sign, I'm not signing to take away your money. Or on the other hand, some say it's begetted. The terminology, the sugya is hashavas aveda. That you're not allowed to charge for hashavas aveda. The son can't. This is the key. You say that it's used in all this literature. Hashavas. If the son, he can't get one penny until she signs the waiver. So
if somebody finds an aveda, can he request a reward?
No, he cannot. No. There's a mitzvah deraisa, hashavas aveda. You can request if I have to care for it, if I have to go feed the animal, if I have to go put it in a safety deposit vault, I have to pay a service fee. But just if it doesn't cost me anything, you can't demand it. So here, since the son can't get his money without her signature, it's in the category of hashavas aveda, and hashavas aveda, you have no right to charge money. So this is a very interesting inyan. Okay, one of the very quick inyan. Some want to argue, some make this, okay, this opens up a lot of interesting halachic inyanim. Someone argued that bizman hazeh, women should take 50%, should take a full share. Dina de malchusa dina. That's the way, the government, there are laws, there are state laws. Dina de malchusa dina, forget about halachic wills, forget about what it says in the Torah. The Torah also acknowledges dina de malchusa dina. How do you deal with dina de malchusa dina? So just don't want to bring out the point. There's a point. The point is, this Yisoy Dina Malchus Dina, according to many Paiskim, is only true with regard to matters that are to the benefit of the government. When the government is collecting tax in order to build bridges, to support an army, to do social services, it's for the benefit of the government. Then you have to follow rules. But the government, there's no such concept of Dina de Malchus Dina when it gets involved between matters between two Jews that has no benefit to the government. The government doesn't get any benefit whatsoever if the brother and sister split the assets 50-50, or the brother gets all the money and the girl gets nothing, and the girl gets everything. There's no difference. Taxes, let's make a situation where there's no tax issue. There's no tax issue. The tax is going to be exactly the same. The government doesn't get any difference. So you want to say, well, according to New York state law, tax code law, there's an estate law, and the state law says that those assets are divided equally. That's all fine and good if the government would get something out of it. But if the government doesn't get anything out of it, then there's no such thing called Dina de Malchusa Dina. One other quick issue, if someone wanted to say that they should make a takon and split the money evenly, because that's the way the world we live in today, midin hefker bezin hefker. There should be a takon as bezin hefker. You don't need halachic wills, you don't need to worry, just split the money and bezin will get up on Rosh Hashanah and say hefker bezin hefker. That's how we want it to be done. So to this, all the pious can say, you don't say hefker bezin hefker when the Torah tells you otherwise. Bezin has no power to do hefker bezin hefker when the Torah sets rules. The Torah explicitly says there's a son, there's a pishnayim, the daughter gets nothing. Bezin doesn't have the right wholesale just to say hefker bezin hefker, or to follow or even minog when it's keneged what it says beferish in the Torah. When the Torah is silent on the matter and there's an issue, then bezin has a right to enter and say hefker bezin hefker, or to get involved. But what the Torah explicitly gives you another set of rules, and due to circumstance you want to work around those rules, fine, work around the rules, but don't work around the rules abusing the koyach of hefker bezin hefker and minag hamakom. Okay, so these are just some issues relating to Yerusha. We'll stop here. Yeah. Yeah.